This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
What is happening now is that cannabis is becoming mainstream in this country. So 62% of Americans currently live in a state where it's some kind of legality for cannabis. And the fastest growing cohort of these people are women and boomers. And so it's also an opportunity for women to participate in a brand new industry and have more leadership roles in that than they have in other industries.
With the passing of the 21st Amendment in 1933, the United States repealed alcohol prohibition. Prior to the prohibition era, saloons had catered to an almost exclusively male clientele. So it took several years for distillers and brewers to catch on to the fact that women enjoyed drinking alcohol as well. The first successful spirits marketing campaign that targeted women for Crown Royal Whiskey was in 1939, with a velvety purple pouch apparently meant to double as a jewelry bag. Fast forward to 2017, where cannabis prohibition is beginning to crumble state by state. Like its liquid predecessor, the cannabis industry is still largely male-dominated. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak to two women who are working to change all that. Andy Greenberg and Sharon Krinsky are the founders of Society Jane, a cannabis business that targets women customers. We discuss the game-changing medicinal benefits of a relatively new cannabinoid derivative, CBD, how it appeals to a female market, and the challenges this burgeoning industry faces while prohibition is still technically the law of the land. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Andy Greenberg and Sharon Krinsky. They are the co-founders of Society Jane. Andy, Sharon, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex. It's good to be here.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for having us.
Why don't you first tell us what Society Jane's mission is?
So Society Jane, also known as the Good Girls Cannabis Club, is a cannabis concierge just for women. And what that means is that we have curated products that women would appreciate and are useful and therapeutic for things that women are looking to have an effect on, like sleep or an enhanced sex life or pain relief. And one of the things that we noticed was, as we went around to dispensaries, they're very male-focused in the product selection that they have, in the people who work there, in what the place looks like, and we decided, you know, there ought to be a place for women where they feel comfortable, and maybe they don't want to go to a dispensary, and maybe they would like to just consume cannabis but not have the whole world know. So we decided that that place should be Society Jane, and so we are proudly and exclusively for the benefit of women. We deliver to women and we host home parties, kind of Tupperware parties for pot. And we do a little Cannabis 101 and we explain the benefits of the products and women get to ask questions. And it's all about empowering women and giving them the tools they need to investigate the products and know what's going to work for them best.
And how did you guys get into this? Why don't you give us both your backgrounds? Andy.
First of all, I've been to 150 plus dead shows, so I was no stranger to cannabis. But it really hit home for me when one of my sons was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. And after years of pharmaceuticals and trying various medications, we found that medicinal cannabis in a high CBD variety was the only thing that alleviated his nausea. And that really opened my eyes to the medical and anti-inflammatory aspects of this plant. And I started doing research. And then Sharon and I who've known each other since our kids were in kindergarten, you know, we would be at parties and just talking about our experiences at dispensaries and how it was so male. And we sort of came to this from different angles, but we realized that there was a niche for women that we could try to fill. So before Society Jane, I was a practicing attorney. I practiced environmental law for about 20 years, and then I segued slowly into trusts and estates and still have an active license. So I am both co-founder and chief counsel at Society Jane. So I do some of the regulatory work for us. We both do, but that's kind of my focus sometimes.
Before Society Jane, I was in advertising. I was on the creative side and had been in advertising in San Francisco for about 21 years and left as the president and creative director of an agency. And during that time, I worked on, first of all, advertising is a very male-dominated industry. There are only, when I was creative director, there were only about 3% of creative directors in the country were women. So it was a very male-focused work environment. I worked on car accounts, I worked on financial services accounts, and professional sports accounts. So boy, 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 boy. So when I left advertising, I wanted to do something that was more women-focused, more of interesting to women, and also, you know, I'm a marketer, so I wanted something that was kind of a marketing challenge. And when we observed that there was really nothing out there specifically for women, that's when my, you know, advertising brain kind of went into high gear and thought we can build a brand around this and help women at the same time. So that's how I got into it.
And let's look at it from a marketing perspective, not Society Jane specifically, but cannabis. What do you think is the appeal to women that might be different than the appeal to men? It seems like CBD is a real game changer for the industry. Maybe you can start by explaining to our listeners around the country who may not be familiar with what it is, how it is transforming the industry.
There are two main components in cannabis that people know about. There's THC, which everybody knows about. That's the stuff that gets you high. And there's CBD, which is short for cannabidiol. And that's one of the other main molecules in cannabis. And there are about 80 more, but those two are the most, I would say, well-known and, as Andy and I like to say, the hardest working of the cannabinoids. So anything you feel in your body from consuming cannabis, you feel because of one of these molecules. And so CBD, the reason why it's having such a moment right now is that it is non-psychoactive and non-intoxicating. So it has the same benefits as the entire cannabis plant, but you're not going to get high from it. And for women, that's very attractive, particularly for women who are working or their mothers or they are, you know, whatever reason, they don't want to feel anything in their, any psychoactivity. So they are seeking out CBD for its benefits to kind of calm anxiety. It's a very, very good anti-inflammatory. It's good for pain. It's a wonderful component of the cannabis plant that for years was not even thought of because everybody just thought you used pot to get high. And so that's definitely driving women's interest. The other thing is, in any product category, any consumer category, women are the primary purchasers of that category. And cannabis is no different in terms of almost like a pharmaceutical, but the cannabis industry has always been a boys' club. It's been, you know, stinky, smelly. You know, women were not a driving force in that. And what is happening now is that cannabis is becoming mainstream in this country. So 62% of Americans currently live in a state where it's some kind of legality for cannabis. And the fastest growing cohort of these people are women and boomers. And so it's also an opportunity for women to participate in a brand new industry and have more leadership roles in that than they have in other industries.
And the medicinal properties of CBD were largely unknown until recently. Was it just a technological breakthrough from a science perspective that allowed CBD to be parsed from THC, or was it more of a marketing issue?
It wasn't until the middle 1960s, actually, that even the molecule, the compound THC, was isolated from cannabis. It was a scientist in Israel, and he was conducting research, and he was able to isolate the compound THC. This is the compound that gets people high. And so you would imagine that the process would, go very quickly and they could isolate other compounds. Because it's a Schedule I drug in the United States, there's been almost no research on it.
But like 2 or 3 years ago, you would go into a medicinal dispensary and not see these things that you're seeing on labels now in California, where it's 3-to-1 ratio of CBD to THC. What moved that glacier, so to speak?
Well, part of what moved that glacier was the upsurgence of the hemp industry. Hemp is also a good source of CBD. CBD can be derived from both the hemp plant and the cannabis plant. Now, the fibers of the cannabis plant can be used the same way the fibers of the hemp plant can be used to make ropes and sails and do all that stuff. The government has always given the thumbs up to hemp as a source of both the fibers and CBD. So I think that there's been a little bit more governmental research into CBD that's hemp-derived recently. I've actually been seeing it on the shelves of health food stores legally because it's hemp-derived and not cannabis-derived. And you can, at this point, you can mail hemp-derived CBD products across state lines, which you cannot do with anything that's cannabis-derived. So I think that because it's considered federally legal, there's been a real upsurge of attention on that, and people have seen that as a legal alternative to cannabis products that a lot of people still think of as illegal. I want to get high, so high. I want to get high, so high. I want to get high, so high.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Andy Greenberg and Sharon Krinsky. They're the co-founders of Society Jane. So Sharon, you were speaking about the research that was done in the 60s by an Israeli scientist. Israel continues to be at the forefront of scientific research in the field. However, it's largely uncovered in the academic world here in this country. How has that set back your efforts and similar businesses that are trying to raise awareness about the medicinal properties of CBD and cannabis in general?
I think the largest harm that cannabis prohibition has done in this country, and the fact that it is placed on the DEA Schedule I, right up there with heroin. There's a lot of things that have gone wrong because of that, but one of the things that touches my heart the most is that for people who are very sick and that cannabis has shown to work really extraordinarily well, people with epilepsy, people with wasting disease, people with post-traumatic stress disorder, they're not able to use cannabis because the federal government has said that they will not fund any research at any universities that accept federal dollars. So therefore, nobody knows how this stuff actually works on their body. It's just anecdotal evidence. And one of the reasons why I think it still stays in prohibition is you've got Big Pharma, who is seeing that in states where cannabis becomes legal, the addiction to opioids decreases. And if people don't think that bothers big pharmaceutical companies, it absolutely does. That's cutting right into their profit margin. And I just think that's unconscionable to allow, and it's the federal government is allowing people to suffer and or become addicted to these pharmaceuticals that just are there to make money. It's I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but it is definitely a odd cycle of craziness to me.
And do you think the fact that CBD can allay anxiety and inflammation could also be part of Big Pharma's calculus here? Right now, you mentioned opioids, but I'm sure anti-inflammatory drugs and anti-anxiety drugs are big, big business in this country.
Yes, absolutely. What we're finding is that at our parties and talking to our members, when they realize, especially older women, when they realize that the stuff they've been taking and are worried about becoming addicted to isn't really even necessary once they discover that cannabis has anti-inflammatory, anti-anxiety, analgesic properties. A lot of the senior citizens especially don't want to get high, and they have really relied on CBD, as you were saying, and they're getting great results. They're feeling better, and they're not worried about becoming addicted to this stuff. So I think that part of what Big Pharma is really afraid of is that once the awareness grows throughout this country and as more states become at least medically legal, if not adult use legal, that more and more people are going to become aware of the healing properties of this plant, and it's going to eliminate the need for a lot of pharmaceuticals eventually. And I think that's the concern.
Maybe you can walk us through, without getting too much into the weeds, some of the legal wranglings that are underway, not only in the Bay Area, but across California, as it moves from a medicinal state to a legal state, and explain how this might be a template for other states and how it might inform listeners around the country as their states undergo similar transitions.
First of all, I like how you said out of the weeds or into the weeds. I wish I could answer that question with some authority. What we're dealing with now in the Bay Area, in San Francisco specifically, and in the state, is a lot of confusion about what the regulatory scheme will look like. As you know, in November of 2016, the California voters voted for legalized adult use and recreational cannabis. The way that is being implemented is still very confusing, both to companies like ours and manufacturers, and actually everybody in the industry is sort of waiting to see how the regulations are going to shake down. What the state has said is that it will issue permits to existing businesses and to new applicants once they have a valid permit from their local municipality. So we've been very involved in the regulatory process here in San Francisco as those regulations have been debated through the Board of Supervisors and were finally voted upon by the Board of Supervisors just 2 weeks ago. We're still not 100% sure how that's going to affect our business and how that's going to affect the industry in general. So I know that's not a very direct answer, but that's sort of the best we can do right now because we're waiting to see how the local and state regulations affect each other and what they'll ultimately look like.
Everybody. Wait a minute. You know my baby.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with Andy Greenberg and Sharon Krinsky. They're the co-founders of Society Jane. If you're looking to get into this industry and you hear that the Attorney General talking about marijuana being just as harmful as heroin, that's got to loom over your decision to go headfirst into this business. You guys sacrificed a lot to start Society Jane. What kind of message would you want to spread to other ganjapreneurs who are interested in getting into the industry?
So the threat of federal involvement is never really out of your mind. Even though we have operated entirely legally since we started and adhere to the laws such as they are, it never goes away that at any given time, the feds could come in and say, okay, what you're doing is illegal, confiscate your product. They could seize the property that the product is in, and jail time. And a great many people and our people that we know have been subject to that kind of thing. So it doesn't go away, but all we can do is play by the rules that are put in front of us. And the state rules say that we can operate under these certain regulations, and we do that to the letter. I will say that I didn't start this business, and Andy didn't, when our children were young. I think that wouldn't have been appropriate to kind of put them in a position where at any given time, if the feds wanted to, they could come in and, you know, knock on the door and what are you doing?
So when you say not starting your business when your children are young, you were more concerned of being thrown in jail than your kids being exposed to cannabis, just to clarify.
Absolutely. We have been loud and proud about what we do. To us, it's no different from not wanting our children to have alcohol. The same rules apply. And it, you know, makes no difference whether it's alcohol or driving without a license or consuming cannabis. If you're not old enough to do it, you're not old enough to do it. And, we didn't stop having glasses of wine in our house just because our kids were little. In fact, we probably had more, but, we wouldn't let them have it. So, yeah, it was mostly just not wanting that uncertainty to come back and affect our kids in any way. But Jeff Sessions saying things like people who smoke marijuana are bad people, the federal government treating it as a very serious infraction, all of that is, it's just sort of part of the fabric right now. I'm kind of even a little used to it. And a lot of the times when we talk to people and give them education, I have to remind myself to start out with, this is a federally illegal situation here, and remind people of that, because particularly in San Francisco, many people thought it was illegal, 15 years ago, and it's just a different situation. But yes, the threat of it definitely looms, and I think regulation may up that threat a little bit, because there are going to be people who are still operating in the black market, and they will be they'll be watched and possibly subject to search and prosecution. So, if I were someone in the cannabis business in the black market, I would be more afraid rather than less afraid now. The regulation is just going to bring more police attention, I think.
So as business owners and mothers in this industry, I'm sure one of the questions you often get is, why are these edibles in candy form? How do we protect our children from this? You mentioned how you can have a glass of wine around the house, but wine hasn't been marketed to kids as much as
let's say cigarettes. Cigarettes has been pretty pernicious in their cartoon characters and things like that. And so people see some of those similarities when they see like a lollipop, which is THC based. There's some reasons for it. It's not necessarily marketing to kids, but maybe you can speak towards that.
In Colorado, very recently, they banned certain shapes of candies to be used as edibles. You can no longer have gummy bears, and you can no longer have like some of the sour fruit things that have been enhanced with THC in the past and sold as edibles. And that may be the way of the future in other states where adult use has become legal. Edibles are sort of a hot button topic because in certain forms they are very appealing to kids. And what we find is they are the method of consumption that we at Society Jane typically give the most warnings about to adults. But I imagine that if people had this around the house, they would have to give the same. They would have to be very cautious around kids because edibles take a long time to kick in, and people tend to think that nothing is happening. After 45 minutes or an hour, nothing is happening. They're going to take some more. And then pretty soon they're laid out on the floor and not enjoying themselves. And, you know, it passes. It's not like people OD from cannabis. They don't.
My view is a little bit more contrarian, and I think that when this subject comes up, what about the kids? What about the kids? What about the kids? And I think it tends to shift personal responsibility onto the manufacturers. And so, you know, it's, yes, if you put something in a bright, happy package and you have you know, a clown on it and you advertise it on Saturday morning cartoons, you know, that's bad. I think that adults are allowed to consume cannabis in a form that tastes delicious, and you make sure you keep it out of the kids' hands. I mean, it's the same thing with, you wouldn't just kind of slap a shot of whiskey down on the coffee table and leave your baby alone with it. So, you know, I understand it. I understand, I think the fear of it, but kids who are out to get into trouble will get into trouble whether cannabis is legal or not.
Andy Greenberg and Sharon Krinsky are the co-founders of Society Jane. Andy, Sharon, thanks so much for being my guests on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having us, Alex. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Jimmy McGriff, Rita Marley, and Ray Charles. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.